League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the legendary Luke Cutfer.
Thank you very much, Corey. That's very kind.
This week, we're talking about a cursed cosmonaut and forgetful fatherlands, but first, we have a wee review.
When will we get a large review, Corey, huh? When?
When we get more than 5 stars, Luke. So keep on trying. But actually, this one is quite a long review. I was going to cut it, but I'll read out the whole thing since you want it. And also, it's from Russia, which will be relevant to the episode. It says, help. This podcast is so good, I binge listened to all the... Maybe I should do it in a Russian accent. To all the episodes in about 2 months. When I started listening, there were already about 200 episodes. It's kind of weird it took me so long to discover the podcast, since I've known about Luke for years, so it took me some time to catch up, but I was listening to basically all of my free time before going to sleep, while cooking, eating, commuting, playing games. Jesus, that's more than I listened to this. I just couldn't stop, and now I'm suffering withdrawal. The podcast is so addictive, you might actually forget to live. P.S. Also just realized that the show reminds me of QI. The host educates us on various topics and occasionally asks tricky questions while guests make silly jokes and Luke is basically Alan Davies.
Wow. The bisexual male Sandy Toksvig. That's what you are, Corey.
I think I should be the next host of QI, Luke. I think it needs to happen.
That's what we're working on. We'll get you there, Corey. Don't worry. Play the long game.
Sandy Toksvig just needs to suffer an accident, so to speak.
Jeez.
No, not an actual accident. I'm going to cause it.
I
shouldn't say that on camera. Anyway, Luke, what's the story for today? Oh, no, that's my job. So I've got a question for you, Luke, and for everyone who's watching or listening. If you're listening, answer this on Spotify or actually head to the YouTube comments and answer it there. The question is, do you want to go to space?
I'm in space right now.
No, you're not in space. You're not in space.
I'm in space right now.
Everyone, everything's in space. You know what I mean by space? Space is like, how far up is space?
There is an answer to that. I think it's 1,500 kilometers.
100 kilometers.
Divided by 10 and take away 50.
In which order?
To what I said. In that order.
Very good. Okay, well, let us know.
Not very good.
Let us know your answer in the comments or, you know, staple it to a pigeon or something. I don't know. It's up to you. So this story today, I've already said it's about Russia and I've already said it's kind of about space. Have you heard of the lost cosmonaut? Not the one that we did an episode on. The other one.
Not
less the, lost, more forgotten. They knew where he was.
The dog that we sent up to space and then let die.
No.
Or the chimp?
You mean Laika?
Yeah.
No. We didn't let her die. We just killed her. Anyway, no. This isn't... There's no death in this story. Well, there's actually quite a lot of death in one part of the story. But there's no death of anyone that we're talking about specifically. So, Sergey...
Sergey... It's a non-specific sort of cloud of death over the whole
You're
story.
You're going to feel so... bad when you find out what this is. Sergey Konstantinovich Krikalev. I did try that out before. I'm going to do it again because I did have it. Sergey Konstantinovich Krikalev. He was a Russian cosmonaut, or rather I should say a Soviet cosmonaut. And I want to tell you a little bit about him and his life, because it is quite interesting. Now, the title of this episode might be The Time-Traveling Astronaut, and that is true. We'll get to it later. But first, a little bit on Sergey. First off, he's really good-looking.
Do you have a picture?
Yes, here it is for everyone who's watching. And Luke,
wow.
I'm not showing you.
So hot. He's, goodness me.
No, he is actually quite...
I certainly would.
He's a looker, man. Honestly, I'm not joking. He was born August 27th, 1958, in Leningrad, in Russia, which was a member of the USSR at that point. It's now St. Petersburg, though. Oh. Look, from like the period around the sort of 90s was... a lot of names changed in places in that region of the world. So I might use them interchangeably.
Are you telling me that countries and places aren't real and are in a constant flow?
wow, Luke, good way to spoil the end of the episode.
Is the end of the episode the collapse of the Soviet Union?
No! No! It's about the middle. So he was a Russian cosmonaut. The word cosmonaut comes from the Greek cosmos, meaning world or universe, really. But if you think about it, it's back then,
yeah.
World was everything. And I find that really interesting. And then not means sailor. It doesn't mean sailor in and of itself, but it comes from the Greek word for sailor. And if you want to know, astronaut, astro, star. So star sailor and cosmonaut is universe sailor.
Star sailor is a way better word.
I honestly think cosmonaut, I prefer cosmonaut to astronaut. Because yes. Astronauts don't do f*** all near stars. It's a lie. Americans be, oh, this is our astronaut. No! No, it's not. The Russians had it right, and you should have used their word for it. Okay? Yeah, there we go. He's married with one daughter. He enjoys swimming, skiing, cycling. It says aerobatic flying. And
aerobatic flying.
Aerobatic, as in aerobatic.
Okay.
I don't know how, like, aerobics. So I guess aerobatic? I don't know. Flying, okay?
I thought it was like flying with like spices.
No, not aromatic flying. That's something slightly different. That
oh, I suppose that would be getting high. We can call that getting high.
No,
aromatic flying. Getting high with spices.
Yeah, the Mile High Club, right? That's what that is.
No.
No?
No.
But you said we could join that together, Luke.
I'll tell you later.
Okay. He also enjoys amateur radio. And this information is from the European Space Agency. And it may be out of date. I don't know if he still enjoys all of these things. Because it also goes on to say that Krikalev is currently training for ISS Expedition 11, which is scheduled for launch in April 2005. So in the past 18 years... he may have fallen out of love with swimming, skiing, cycling, and amateur radio.
So you remember when, quick complete tangent here, you remember when Justin Bieber went to the Anne Frank Museum and claimed that Anne Frank would have been a Belieber?
I don't think she would have been, but yes.
Maybe not. We can, yes. We can have, that's a separate conversation.
After dark.
But remember when Justin Bieber did that?
Yes.
I'm going to claim that this guy would have been a Sci-Guys fan because he was an amateur radio fan. And what is a podcast, if not the new amateur radio? So
that is,
I'm claiming him.
That is very true. I mean, he is alive and not dead. So yeah, he's only 65.
Can we contact him? Let him know about the podcast.
I found out about this a week ago from a TikTok. and then I looked into it. And also, by the way, the TikTok that I found this out from, I watched it back today and it kind of frustrated me because it was one of those things, there were no sources. I had to look it all up myself and they said a bunch of things. Some things were just direct lifts from certain places and other things seemed to be kind of like not invented, but like, you know, a story was being told in a very sort of laid back, sort of colloquial way. And so information was kind of lost there. And so I went into this researching, looking for specific things that were kind of hinted at or implied in this TikTok, and they just seem to be kind of fabricated. But the TikTok itself is generally fine. Anyway, back to this. In 1981, he got a degree in mechanical engineering from the Leningrad Technical Institute. It's not the Leningrad Technical Institute anymore, I don't think. And then he joined the biggest Soviet spacecraft design organization. So much of this, by the way. So many of my notes are just in brackets what the thing is called now. Everything changed names. It's like so that period between like the late 80s and the early 90s is so difficult to talk about when you're thinking about Eastern Europe, because I mean there was a lot of other stuff going on there as well, but everything just changed names. So he became a civilian trainee cosmonaut for 4 years after that, so I think around 1985 he started training. Then he flew his first space mission in 1988 until 1989. And he spent 151 days in space on the Mir space station. I didn't actually look up how to pronounce this. M-I-R it is. And that means, I think, world or peace in Russian. So There you go. Would you like to know more about the space station, Luke?
Yes, because I've only ever heard of one of them. So it's nice to know there are more.
Were more. This is a space station which was launched into orbit in 1986. Now, can I just remind you that we put man on the moon in 69, and in 1986 we're like, okay, space station. Actually,
Space house.
When was the first?
17 years later.
I'm just Googling Yuri in space, and actually one of the first things to come up was anime, because Yuri is... a type of anime that you don't, if you're under 18, don't look into it. I just want to check when Yuri first went to space, and I don't actually remember.
I can tell you exactly when, Corey.
Well, I'll tell you. Look, actually, it's 1961.
1961.
Thank you, Luke. Very helpful. So 1961, and then by 1986, we had a space station. You know, it's mad. Yeah. Anyway, so this was a sort of modular space station. It was a sort of stepped cylinder. Do you know what that is?
Is it like a cylinder that keeps getting bigger and smaller?
Yes, I guess. It's kind of like if two cylinders of different sort of radii sort of smashed together. So, yes.
Yeah, but put a Pringles tube in a beans tube. You got yourself a space station.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a beans.
Like a Heinz beans.
I've never heard anyone call a can of beans a tube.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not incorrect.
You know, as I said it, I realized that, but it is a tube.
No, I mean, it is a tube of Pringles, but it's not a tube of beans. Tube of beans, that's what it's called now.
That's exclusively how I'm going. Rebecca, could you put a tube of beans on for me, please? I'm hungry. Need my tube of beans.
A whole tube, Luke? Really?
One whole tube just for me.
It was essentially, two tubes sort of on there together. So as I said, it was launched in 1986. That was the core module. And it was only about 13 meters long and 4.2 meters in diameter at the widest point, which isn't very big. If you're not quite sure about those sort of conversions, that's 43 feet and 13.8 feet respectively. 13.8 feet, I mean, if I'm about 6 foot, that's just over twice my height.
That's
in width.
Basically a rocket.
Yeah. It's not very big. I mean, if you think about it, like, that's at its widest point. And if you're inside there, you know, I mean, there's not a huge amount of space. I mean, there's lots of space, but you're separated from it with the station. So they sent some people up. And they would travel between that space station and Earth on Soyuz spacecrafts, and they sent cargo and whatnot up. But I mean, it wasn't a super great space station. Apparently, by the time that Krikalev had gone up to it, it was apparently smelly, noisy, and cramped. And I've got a quote here from Doug Millard, who is the senior space curator at the Science Museum in London. Sweat and alcohol were the predominant odors, and the noise from fans and machinery was persistent. Apparently, the cosmonauts had tinnitus. There was mold. When they tested it, you know, way afterwards, they found that there were 140 species of microorganisms aboard. Now, that, to me, I mean, if you were to swab this room, there's probably quite a few microorganisms.
Yeah.
And I mean, in me, there are lots of and you too, in all of us, there are many microorganisms. There being mold and, you know, just stray microbes in your space station, not great, especially because microbes can kind of change what they're like in space. Being exposed to space, some microbes are just like, I'm going to be different now and do slightly different things.
Yeah, you'd almost end up getting like, you know, when you like stick a bunch of animals on an island and then they like evolve separately.
Mm.
You'd get a bunch of like separately evolved like microbes.
Oh, well, potentially, yeah. But this isn't even necessarily, I don't think this is even necessarily a case of evolution. I think they sort of adapt just to the different environment of space, you know, kind of like if locusts, you know, I think locusts are just grasshoppers or something similar, but when exposed to sort of I guess less food, I think it is, they change and become sort of locusts, and the, you know, locusts are the clouds of insects that fly and destroy crops. Or for example, if you expose an axolotl to certain hormones, it will no longer exist in a sort of juvenile-ish state. It will become a full salamander. That's what axolotls are. They're basically just salamanders that haven't fully sort of developed into salamanders. It's slightly more complex than that, but essentially they've got features of juvenile salamanders. That's basically what they are. But yeah, going on with this, that is the Mir space station. You happy with all of that? Happy with all this?
I'm thrilled. Was that the first space station or was it not?
The first space station was the Salyut in 1971.
That also sounds Soviet.
Yeah. But dude, the Soviets did, I mean, if you look at the list of like sort of space achievements, so many Soviets, so many. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I mean, they really pushed the frontiers there. They've got like the top three sort of, I think, most collective time spent in space. I think all three of those are Soviets or Russians.
Wow.
You know, and actually, I think only one of the people in the top 10 is a woman. But still, that's not terribly bad. I was expecting there to be no women being there because...
the bar really has hit the floor.
Yeah.
Of the smelly space station.
Dude, yeah, no, I mean, when I was saying I expected there to be no women because sexism exists, right? And I'm not saying, oh, it's good that there's one woman. It's bad that there's only one woman, but, like, there should be more. But again... bar yes. So low, yeah. So very low. I think in 2001 the Mir made a controlled re-entry, which, do you know what that basically means?
It means that they blow it up, burn it up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, the controlled re-entry means the orbit is decaying,
let it fall,
so we'll make it fall
and on the way let it burn
and make it land somewhere where it won't hurt lots of people. So it landed in the Pacific Ocean, and some pieces still survive. But yeah, no, Krikalev actually, he was part of that sort of mission to sort of remove it, bring it sort of down there. But yeah, it was only designed for five years of use. But it lasted quite a while. 1996 to 1997, there were a lot of issues, but it stayed in service. And as I said, in 2001 is when it went down. And again, this was launched in 1986. So launched in 1986, only supposed to be like 5 years. 2001 is when it came down. It's quite a
it's
while.
It's like our Voyager probe that we're like, that'll do something on the way out to like Jupiter or whatever. And then we're like, he's like, I've left the solar system and I'm still chatting to you. And we're like, okay, do this. And he's like, okay, I'll do that.
Wait, which one was it that someone accidentally sent the wrong instructions?
That's Voyager.
Is that Voyager?
So we've lost, I don't know the update as of right now, mm-hmm. but at some point recently we lost contact with Voyager, like the most amazing thing we have, which is like this object that we've sent out to the edge of the solar, like outside the solar system, and like someone just like screwed up the messages and it turned away so that its broadcasting antenna was not pointed at Earth anymore, but it is set up in such a way that it will eventually reorient.
Yeah.
But we've lost it for quite a while. That person's out there somewhere, and they're just like, they're gonna have to live with that for the rest of their life. I pity you. I hope you're okay.
Imagine going back into the office the next day. I think the person, like, you know, these are very high level people, and like this is a presumably, like, you know, not necessarily the easiest mistake to make, but it's not so incredibly difficult. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
One wrong command, like this sort of stuff with space, like one wrong command, you send a jet slightly the wrong way, it's just gonna turn, right? So it, you know, not terribly difficult mistake to make, but
yeah.
Also going into the office the next day, man, I would rip that person to shreds. Like, oh mate, who lost Voyager? You owe a bill for how many billions? Huh?
I mean, look, the other day I accidentally bought a train ticket on the SciGuys card that I wasn't meant to buy on the SciGuys card. And I felt horrible texting Corey going, sorry, I'll put that £20 back in. Imagine if I had to go, sorry, I've sent the wrong information to Voyager.
I lost Voyager.
The most famous.
If you text me that, I'd be like, look, who gave you the controls to Voyager, huh?
Yeah, it's really not my fault, is it? Who gave me a bank card for SciGuys?
Also, can I point out to anyone watching or listening, Luke messaged to apologize for buying a train ticket on the SciGuys account and then found out he hadn't actually bought it on the SciGuys account.
Yes, that is true. I thought that was a boring extra piece of our story, but no, yeah. No. I bought it from another one of my accounts that I shouldn't have bought it from. So thanks for outing me, Corey.
Yeah, so that's the Mir space station. That's where he was. You know, a cramped, sort of decrepit station. He was up there. Let's talk about the dissolution of the Soviet Union before we get into the actual story here, because this is some very important backdrop. Now, January 1st, 1991, the Soviet Union was the largest country in the world, apparently. It covered, goodness me.
By landmass, I assume, as opposed to population.
22,400,000 square kilometers.
Wow.
Yeah, so it took up about a sixth of the land surface of the Earth. Yeah, so I think it's biggest by number, like space that it takes up.
That's one hell of a total war game.
Right.
Whoa. Like, you had all that territory? That's amazing. They're doing very well. There's a lot of it's uninhabitable, but still, you're doing well.
Having a lot of uninhabitable land makes it harder for people to, you know, invade, I suppose.
So and easier to exile people, too.
Not what I'd be thinking about when running a country, Luke, but thank you for your input. So the population was over 290 million, apparently. 100 different nationalities living there. And I am going to be honest, as we've said on this podcast before, I'm not a history guy, you know? I know some history here and there, but like I don't really dig into a lot of this stuff. I, if you were to ask me, Corey, who was a part of the Soviet Union, I'd be like, I mean, I've got, like, based on vibes,
yeah,
I can generally, but, you know, looking at this, it was about the 26th of December, 1991, or the 25th of December, 1991, or the 31st of December, 1991, that it dissolved. I have seen those three dates in multiple different places. I think the 25th, the sort of head of the Soviet Union, was like, I'm stepping down, but he'd also been basically kind of like kidnapped and held hostage for a while along with his family. And the 26th may have been when it like officially, the 26th or the 31st may have been when it sort of officially was dissolved. I don't know. Basically, between that weird period, you know, that weird period between Christmas and New Year where like time isn't real, that's when the Soviet Union dissolved.
Why don't we have a 12 days of the collapse of the Soviet Union? On the first day of the collapse of the Soviet Union, one of these guys was held hostage by his family.
By his family. Oh, with his,
sorry, with his family. With his family. Okay, I got that wrong.
By the other heads of, yeah.
I see. Yeah, that makes more sense.
And I guess we probably don't sing songs about it because it would be quite insensitive, you know, like what you just did.
Well,
there.
I'm very sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to the former Soviet states.
I'm very sorry, former Soviet states.
And all the people living in them.
And all the people living in them.
And you owe them £100 each.
I owe you 100 Soviet currency each.
Oh, that's quite lucky, because there was some inflation. We'll get to that, though. So, tens of thousands of nuclear weapons, apparently, which is more than you need. I think you need about five.
One big one will probably do it.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, actually, I think the optimal number of nukes is zero planet-wide. That'd be great. Maybe one, just in case of aliens, you know? You know, like an Independence Day kind of situation, or, you know, Avengers kind of situation. But that's beside the point. So, 15 independent countries replaced the Soviet Union. That's a weird way of saying that. They were part of the Soviet Union and it broke up into these 15 countries. Do you know any of the countries, Luke?
Yes. Ukraine?
Yes.
Poland?
No.
Damn it. Czechoslovakia?
No.
Russia?
Yes.
Great.
Can I just say the fact that it took you so long to get to Russia?
So I thought that one was obvious.
I thought so too, but evidently not.
God, what are the other former Soviet states? Oh, that one that's helping Putin at the moment.
Would you like me to just run through them?
Please, yeah, put me out of my misery.
So again, this is just a list that I got from Britannica. Luke and I know almost next to nothing about geography and history because we're very laser focused on knowing not very much about science. So that takes up a lot of our time.
Takes a lot of time to not know this much about science.
So Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Estonia, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Latvia, Lithuania, Moldova, Russia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Ukraine, and Uzbekistan. I looked up how to pronounce those. So tell me I did it wrong. I dare you. I probably did.
Ling, ling, ling. Are you there, God? It's me, Yadbel.
What are you praying for, Adbel? It's me, God.
Dear God, I'm looking for something that can show that I'm the fourth Psy guy, that I don't like capitalism, and something that helps me tell what time of year it is, whilst also being a little bit risque.
Well, Adbel, as a good little Christian boy, I shall grant all of your prayers, and I will give you a sexy scientist Psy guy calendar.
Whoa!
A thanks capitalism black and white ringer t-shirt.
Whoa!
And a pin badge saying that you're the fourth Psy guy. Now, as an Adbel, you are made of metal, so I don't know how you're going to get the pin badge on, but you can sort of just place it nearby, or you can place it on one of our listeners if they decide to buy one.
Well, look, that was an odd conversation between God and the Adbel.
I'm not Luke, I'm God.
Well, God, thank you very much, and I'll pass that on to my good friend Corey, who is coming in right now.
Oh, hi, Corey.
Hi, everyone. I'm here to tell you about the brand new Psy Guys merch, which is on pre-order for about 2 weeks more now. It ends at the end of October. You can still get it after that. You just won't get the pre-order discount. And you want a pre-order discount because we don't like capitalism, right?
That's right. God does not like capitalism. I'm not Luke. I'm still God. And I'm telling you that if you don't go to psyguys.co.uk/merch, I'm sending you to hell.
Well, you heard God, so you better get your hands on this soon or go to hell, I guess.
Yeah, go to hell. Or buy some Psy Guys merch. Your choice. Don't say I didn't give you a choice. I am the Lord. Goodbye.
Psyguys.co.uk/merch. Back to the show.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Would you like to hear about the time that Sergei Krikalev got stuck in space?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I would.
So,
was he in his little smelly tube?
Well, it was not just his little smelly tube, Luke.
Was there more than one person in that smelly tube?
How about you let me tell you the story before you ask?
Hurry up.
I'm trying. So, he went up on the 19th of May, 1991. Now, as an engineer, Krikalev did. Now, as you may be aware from the dates that I gave you already,
oh, no.
The Soviet Union was still a thing. It was maybe a little bit tumultuous, but it was still a thing. So he went up with a few different astronauts, a British one and another Soviet, I believe, as well. They returned to Earth. The British one, Helen Sharman, returned to Earth after about a week, I believe. And then the other two, Krikalev and Art Sabarsky, remained on the space station. And they did a few EVAs. Do you know what an EVA is?
Extra vehicular activities.
Yeah, going outside the space station to do stuff, basically. And so they did a few experiments and some maintenance stuff. They were just up there working, right? And then Kazakhstan was pushing for independence. Other places were also, but Kazakhstan is important here. And Mikhail Gorbachev, you know Gorbachev? Gorbachev, who was the president of the Soviet Union, was like, oh, do you know what would really quell the Kazakhs? It would be to just send one of them up to space, you know? Because their sort of government was saying, hey, there's not been any of us in space. You've just been putting all the Russians in space. Put one of us. Mm. The only issue is there was literally no one in Kazakhstan who was trained to be a cosmonaut or trained to, like, you know, a good enough level. Anyway, they sent up a Kazakh engineer, a flight engineer. He wasn't qualified enough. So Krikalev was like, well, okay, I'll stay here then, because you can't leave this space station without a flight engineer. And this guy isn't experienced enough. So I'll stay up for a little bit longer. So he was supposed to have a 5-month sort of tour, I guess, a 5-month mission. So that was from, I think, May he launched, and it was supposed to end around about October, but October comes, they send up the Kazakh guy that, you know, isn't trained enough to do that job. And so, you know, Krikalev is like, well, I'll stay for a bit, right? I'll stay for another little bit. So then it's Krikalev, I think, and just one other person, essentially. It was July that he decided to stay up, but October was the time where he was, I think, supposed to maybe switch over or stay for a little bit longer and then decide when they're sending him back down. And Kazakhstan is kind of important here because he was launched from Kazakhstan. So the launch point was in what became Kazakhstan.
And we still do that, by the way. I think I can't remember which company it is, or if it's maybe it's Russia, but yeah, we still launch rockets from Kazakhstan.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't, this is the thing. When it comes to like looking into this sort of stuff, I can't look at everything. So I actually have very little idea what happened to that place afterwards. But essentially, he was sent from there, right? And I believe that was supposed to be where he was sort of landing as well. yeah, just bear that one in mind. He was 33 and he was supposed to be returning in October. And then he stayed a little bit longer because Kazakhstan kind of became, I think, independent or declared sovereignty. Basically, they were like, we're Kazakhstan now. Like, we're our place. And so the Soviet Union didn't quite have the money to send him back down because...
Did they not have the money, or were they holding him hostage?
No, because we weren't holding him hostage so much as Kazakhstan were just like, well, it's going to cost you more money now to send stuff. And so the Soviet Union was like,
oh, I see.
We don't have enough money to get you down.
Like if Scotland leaves the UK and we don't have any oil left.
Oh, right. I thought you were trying to make a thing about Scotland not being able to. Yes. No.
No, because that's where all the oil is.
Yeah, of course.
It's all Scotland.
Yeah, it's also where all the nuclear weapons are as well. So, you know, we're sitting pretty.
I see your game now.
Yeah. Oh, we were just endangering Scottish people. No, you were arming us. No, So that was sort of situation there. He was like stuck up in space. He didn't know what was going to happen. He kept on asking, and they were like, well, another month. We need to get the money in. Essentially, it's kind of like one of those situations when you're working, you know, in, say, a restaurant or, you know, in the service industry or whatever, and you just get kept on because it's busy. They're like, oh, but we need the staff. And you're like, yeah, but I was supposed to finish like a few hours ago. No, come on. This person's off ill today, so we need you to stay later. And you're like, how is my 6-hour shift turned into 12 hours, you know? Except this was 5 months turned into much longer. So he wasn't up there alone, let's say. I mean, he was up there alone for a little bit, I think. But what I'm talking about here is that he enjoyed radio. I mentioned that earlier. And what he would do is communicate with normal people. Do you know ham radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of amateur radio. And that's kind of, I mean, it's mad because it feels like you shouldn't be able to communicate with people on a space station using just a radio, a sort of like a personal radio.
So there was no like ground. It wasn't like he was sending like his signal to ground and then they were sending it out.
I mean,
his ham radio was reaching from space.
I guess I'm not really.
There's nothing in the way, so I guess it kind of makes sense.
The atmosphere is the only thing, yeah. But that's not too. But radio waves, I think, travel fairly well through the atmosphere. But yeah, no, he was only 350 kilometers from Russia at some point. I mean, he's traveling around the world. He's communicating with someone in Australia. I think it was directly, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was Kathleen Lewis, I believe. Is it Kathleen Lewis? Kathleen Lewis is a historian of space operations. And in a quote from the BBC, she said that's how they formed informal contacts all around the world, basically by using radio and just contacting people using ham radio. It's quite interesting. I mean, she also says Krikalev became immensely popular around the world because he was an astronaut who spoke to ordinary people on Earth through the space station's radio. Really interesting.
So, sorry, it's the space station's radio. It's not like he's not brought up his little home radio kit.
No. I mean, the people on Earth are using their personal, their ham radios sort of thing.
To speak to his space station.
Yeah.
That's still amazing that they're able to broadcast back. Like, that's still very impressive that, like, ultimately a home radio kit is still reaching all the way to space.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it's just radio waves, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just radio waves.
I think, interestingly, if this guy today was on a space station and was stuck and his country was collapsing and he's talking to people through ham radio, someone would make a GoFundMe to like get him back to the Earth.
Yeah, but I don't know if they could make a GoFundMe that would kind of reach the goal. What's the ballpark of getting back to Earth, do you reckon?
Today money? I reckon like $2 billion.
Yeah, well, it was 24 mil back then, so...
Ah, easy.
I'll explain what goes into that cost in a sec. But first, we've got to talk about the fall of the Soviet Union, because that's not even happened yet, right?
Oh, my goodness.
He was kind of stuck up there beforehand, but then the Soviet Union collapses, and I've got a quote from Krikalev here. For us, this came as a complete surprise.
Oh, dear.
We did not understand what was happening. God, I was working on my Russian accent.
What's going on there?
Some of it's all right. I didn't practice this quote, Luke.
I was getting cancelled for the 12 days of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
It's not racist to do a Russian accent, Luke. It's not racist. Russian isn't a race. It's a country.
I didn't say it was racist. I said you're getting cancelled.
I'll never be cancelled for my Russian accent, Luke. Never. When we were discussing it, we tried to understand how it would affect the space industry. Basically, you know, they were just like, look, we don't have the money to bring you back. Because the Soviet Union's collapsing, and you're not really a priority because you're in space and you're one guy. So he basically just kept on being told, you need to stay out a bit longer, you need to stay out a bit longer. And he's like, and, you know, he also said, I've got lots of quotes here from him. They say it's tough for me, not really good for my health, but now the country is in such difficulty, the chance to save money must be top priority. Basically, you know, like, he's like, oh, man. I don't know how long I can survive out here in space because he wasn't sort of trained to be out there for that long. Like, that wasn't the plan. It was only supposed to be 5 months, and then it was extended a little bit, and then it's been extended indefinitely. And we'll get into the problems with being in space in just a bit, because it's more than there being less than a good amount of air out there. There are quite a number of problems in space when it comes to surviving. You know, he ended up coming back on the 25th of March 1992, which was 311 days and 10 months in space.
Whoa.
He set the world record. He set a world record, you know, whilst doing that. I mean, he was the third longest consecutive period in space, I believe, at that time. But he ended up accumulating the longest total period of time in space, ever, for 10 years. He held that record for 10 years. So for 10 years, no one had spent a cumulative time in space longer than him. So that's not necessarily, you know, spending 311 days altogether. That's 311 days here, maybe 150 days there. Mm. Total, he had over 800 days in space. Think about 803, perhaps, but we'll get to that in a sec. Anyway, Soviet Union is collapsing. He is still up there. He had a wife and a 9-month-old daughter. He was speaking to his wife weekly, and, you know, they were not doing well because his salary of, I think, 600 rubles... Do you know what inflation is, Luke?
Yeah, well, yep. I think we all know what inflation is these days at the moment, anyway. Mm-hmm. But nothing like the level of inflation that was happening in the Soviet Union, unfortunately.
Yeah, so it got so bad. It got so bad that the Soviet Union, well, Russia, really, because it's no longer the Soviet Union, Russia was selling off seats to the space station to other countries to try and drum up money. Basically, you know, like they sold a seat to Austria for 7 mil. Japan bought a seat for 12 mil to send up a reporter. They were potentially going to sell the space station as well, because they just needed money. They couldn't afford to run these things. And if you think about it as well, it's not like you can just be like, oh, well, we'll stop spending. We'll just stop spending. You've already invested in all of this. You've invested in the space station. And that's the key point, right? There was a way for him to get back home. There was a sort of module that he could get into and it could be released and he could come back down to Earth. Couple issues there. One, it's not really a country for him to land in because the landing point is Kazakhstan now. They're not super friendly with Russia because, Soviet Union collapsed. Things are going nuts. And also, there would be no one on the space station. And so it would essentially be just leaving that to rot. I mean, like, they need someone up there to maintain the space station. And so he was basically stuck there in the sense of like, well, I can leave. But if I leave, the space station is just, that's it. It's gone. So it's like one dude stay up there for an indefinite period of time or lose a space station.
This guy sounds like a legend. Like, in terms of like model citizen, great guy for his country, he sounds like such a, like some of that quote you said earlier that was like, you know, saving money's got to come first when the country's collapsing. I'd be like, get me the fuck down right now.
I know, right? I'd be like, I'm not staying up here. Like, I'm not staying up here. I wouldn't stay up in space for Britain, although I would probably stay up in space to avoid Britain. That's, you know.
The trouble is that they're not even if they have the money to sort of, if they want someone on the space station all the time, even if they have the money to bring him back, no one's going to go because they'll be like, well, what if you don't bring me back next?
Exactly. So that's why they were selling off seats to, Japan and Austria and stuff. The only issue is they were never sending up a flight engineer. And that's why he was there, because he was the only qualified flight engineer.
Wait, so people were visiting him and then going home. And he was like, right, bye, I'll see you later.
I think so. It's really like getting information on his actual time being stuck up there is kind of like difficult. He wasn't there alone the entire time. No, there were like others there, but anyway, so they were selling off seats and stuff, but it was like, you know, they just weren't bringing him back because they couldn't afford it, and they couldn't afford the seat back, and they couldn't afford to send up another qualified flight engineer to take his place.
It's mad because that kind of sounds like the first example of like space tourism, basically. Like Elon Musk and what's his face, Jeffy Boy, and that other one, the one who didn't go quite as high as the rest of them, they think they're pioneering this new thing. But it sounds like it was kind of done by the Soviet Union.
I mean, they were selling it to countries, and it's like countries decide who they're sending. I mean, we've sent other people to space.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay, it's kind of the equivalent of when we tried to send that teacher to space. Well, the Americans tried to send a teacher to space, which obviously didn't go very well, sadly. Yeah. But yes, you're right. The person's not buying the seat. The country's buying the seat and then going, right, we'll send this reporter. Okay,
exactly.
Fair.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And they also tried to send Big Bird at the same time, by the way.
Big Bird as in from Sesame Street?
From Sesame Street, yeah.
Right.
No, not at this time when they sent the teacher up, I think. They wanted to send a Big Bird at the same time.
Just the costume or a person in the costume?
It's not a costume, first off, Luke. It's a Muppet. no, but what do you mean a costume? No, they want to send up Big Bird. But the thing is, right, if Big, like, you got to think, what would have happened if Big Bird had been in that sort of tragedy. If you don't know what we're talking about, they sent up a rocket exploded, right? It was a failed launch, I believe, and it just kind of, you know, I think it killed everyone on board. I mean, of course it would.
I believe there was like, it was something so, it was like a washer failed to expand at the right time or something. It was something so little, and then the whole rocket just went up in flames.
These things can teeter on a knife's edge, you know? But you got to think, what would they have done? Because, you know, it would have been televised and everything. You wouldn't be able to get kids, kids wouldn't be able to, you know, ignore the fact that Big Bird had blown up in a rocket on TV, you know?
Yeah.
Do you just retire the carrot? Sorry, Sesame Street, Big Bird died in a rocket. And now we deal with death on Sesame Street. There you go. But Big Bird's cousin, Bigger Bird, is here. So... Anyway, he was, as I said, he was married. He had a daughter who was 9 months old. Again, imagine having a 9-month-old baby and being stuck in space for like 10 months. Absolutely mad. Or really, really horrid. And you wouldn't even be able to do like video calls or anything at this point. Do you know what I mean? It would just be radio, really. I mean, he was less worried about himself because they had all the stuff they needed on the space station, right? They had food, they had air, water. That's about it. And down on the ground, his salary, because of hyperinflation, was worth less and less and less. And actually, when he ended up landing, he was earning less than what a bus driver would earn. Wow. So bus drivers were being paid more than astronauts at the, you know, during the collapse of the Soviet Union, purely because the astronauts didn't have a change in salary because he was stuck up in space.
He couldn't negotiate. And he didn't have a union.
Exactly. So. And they have all the power, don't they? Yeah. Like, he's in space. What's he going to do? And I keep on saying astronaut. I really shouldn't. It's cosmonaut. And I think that's actually quite important. The distinction there, he was a cosmonaut. And again, it's a better word anyway. So, cosmonauts get paid less than bus drivers, apparently. So,
What is a cosmonaut?
Cosmonauts.
If not a bus driver.
just
drives up instead.
Yeah, but there's no passengers, is there?
True.
Yeah, so in many ways...
passengers are each other.
Okay. So I'm going to continue on and just kind of move past what you've said. So he was up in space and, you know, he didn't want much. All he asked for was lemons and honey. Just want some lemons and honey. You know, just something because, you know, space food. Actually, maybe. Who knows? Space food is obviously not going to be as appetizing as what you'd get down on the ground. So lemons and honey. And it was really difficult to get that. So they didn't send him honey. They sent him a lemon and horseradish.
Oh. But the lemon's only good if you have the honey. Like, you need the sugary thing to make the lemony thing nice.
Horseradish instead of honey. It's so funny. Like, it is the most sort of like... Like, if you're thinking about the sort of, like, stereotype of, like, brutal Russian sort of, like... It's like, no honey? Horseradish. Like, yeah, like...
Suck
like
it up.
These two things are equivalent to... Okay, sure. So they sent him some horseradish and some lemon. And, you know, his wife was on the ground, and she did not want to worry him. You know, he's stuck up in space. Like, he can't do anything. So why would you tell him about all the horrible stuff going on? So she tried to hide some of it from him. Luckily for him, there was an amateur radio enthusiast in Australia who he was in correspondence with. And essentially, she'd learned some Russian, I think, as well, before moving to Melbourne. And she was, you know, she was chatting to one of the previous people in the space station. So she ended up chatting to Krikalev. And, you know, she would drive around Melbourne in her car and sometimes just sit, look at the sky whilst chatting to him on her ham radio. Like, it's mad. And she was updating him. And he said afterwards, without her, I would not have known why I wasn't being allowed home. Yeah, because his wife was trying to hide stuff from him to protect his sort of, you know, and he didn't know. He was in the dark. No one was really telling him what was going on.
Yeah, because the country also wasn't telling him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, like, you know, the landing place was now in a different country. Everything had fallen apart. And, you know, there's no money. There's no real money there. And it's like, who ponies up for this?
Yeah.
And also, like, you're a citizen of the, you know, I guess he's a citizen of the Soviet Union, sort of Russia or whatever, right? He's up in space. Things have changed. Like, there would have been, I believe, sort of like, you know, issues of nationality, you know, in the same way that, like, if the sort of United Kingdom were to dissolve, right? I'm Scottish. I was born in Scotland. I lived in Scotland for the majority of my life, and I only moved to England for uni, and then I've stayed here because of, you know, because for work and friends and all of that sort of stuff, right? There is nothing on like my sort of documents, you know, and sort of my passport or my driver's license or anything like that, that says I'm Scottish. It's all British. And I believe, you know, I mean, my birth certificate will say that place that I was born, but like, you start have to going to, if you have to start going to birth certificates to figure out nationality, it's a bit more complex than that, right? If the United Kingdom were to dissolve tomorrow, like, I'm going to need to make sure that, like, I have Scottish citizenship. Do you know what I mean? That's sure. So that's the kind of thing that would be going on there. It's not quite, and if you think about it, it could be more difficult, right? What if you were born in England, but both your parents are Scottish, and, you know, you lived in Scotland for a bit, then you live in England again, but you feel, you know, you're Scottish. You want that Scottish nationality. Like, how do you determine who goes where, who gets what, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and that's all happening. And he's in space.
It's a strange one, though, because it feels like the kind of thing, like, because when you have inflation, one of the things happening in inflation, there's a few things going on. One of the things is just general confidence in your currency, right? Mm. As in, like, people who hold currency don't believe your currency will be worth as much in 2 weeks, in a month, in a year. So they sell it. And that's one of the things that's driving down the buying power of the currency. And it kind of feels like rescuing your dude from space would be one of the things you might do as a country to sort of like kind of reassure everyone that everything's still fine and the economy is still going and the government still has control over things. Obviously, it doesn't actually mean that, but so much about economic policy is like, I don't think they'd ever want to admit it, but it's about perception of it. It's not necessarily about,
well, is that
fact?
Is that why like soft power is important then? Like, you know, like sports and stuff, like making a country seem stronger and better. Does that come into it? I don't know
if there's anything about kind of like a country seeming strong because of doing well at sport. I've always seen sport as like almost like a peacetime version of war. Like you're kind of testing like which country can produce the strongest person in this specific way, and which person can produce the fastest person in this sort of way, which person can produce the most accurate person in this sort of way. It's sort of like war, but like fun war, like peacetime war. But the harmless war, right? But that's my own opinion. That's not necessarily policy. But and then the economic power of sport in that sense is that yes, if you do well in something, millions of people are going to flock to your country. So they might, if you're like doing well in the World Cup, people might come to your country. And yeah, so a general perception of your country as being like, England has or had at least that sort of general perception of like they're great at doing the arts, they're great at sports, they're great, that kind of thing. Whether we still have that or not, don't know.
The UK had that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just correcting you, Luke, talking about England when Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland all exist.
Yeah.
Little Anglo-centric.
Well, I don't know what
the
perception...
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know. Okay, so we're going to move on before you try and slander any of the rest of the countries in the, you know, in the, what, the UK? I was going to say the UK Union. I couldn't figure out what it was called. I was so used to saying the Soviet Union now. I'm like, what are we? The Kingdom Union? Doesn't matter. Anyway, back to this, right? Back to this. So
I don't know what just happened.
He was stuck up at what? You were being racist towards Scottish people.
I just don't know what people from other countries, how they attribute it, whether they attribute it as an English thing or as a British thing. I don't know.
Americans will absolutely call it all English, but they tend to not understand the difference between the UK, Britain, England.
I imagine they kind of all just wrap up all that kind of like nonsense as like with England, because it's like the Queen of England and like all that kind of stuff. It's all like,
or the King of England.
England, yes. Well, yes.
Kingland.
Right, new name. Kingland.
So, getting back to this actual story that we're discussing today. So, he wasn't being told much from his wife. He was being told basically from a random Australian or a random person in Australia. And, you know, he was being left in the dark by his country. And what was going on here, as I've said, is that they could not afford to sort of send up someone to replace him and get him back down. So it was a choice of basically scrapping the space station or bringing the guy back down. And at this point, he'd been in space for 311 days. Way longer than he was supposed to, and dear me, it was rough on him, right? So what ended up happening is Germany, I believe, ended up paying 24 mil to get a ticket for someone to replace him. Klaus Dietrich Flade Klaus Dietrich Flader. Krikalev basically got to come home because this guy was replacing him. When he landed, this is mad, right? You know, this had been quite a while after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, right? Like, it happened, you know, this was maybe, goodness me, what was the actual date that he came back? I can't quite remember. March, 25th of March, 1992. So, you know, almost 4 months after everything had gone down. He's wearing a USSR thing.
Mad.
And a flag and everything on it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's, this stuff had been gone for a few months.
When he left, his country existed.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly, right? So he gets out of the capsule, and I'll give you some quotes here about how he looked. Pale as flour and sweaty, like a lump of wet dough. And then...
Imagine being described... Imagine you've spent 300 plus days in space and then you get described like that.
Well, I mean, I feel like he would probably... He wouldn't sort of disagree with that too
much. Yeah, you don't have to say it, though.
Yeah, but look, four men had to help him stand and get out of the capsule. Yeah. He put his feet on the ground for the first time. Gravity was a weird one. He hadn't been used to gravity for almost a year, 10 months. He had a fur coat thrown over him, very Russian, I should say, and a bowl of broth was brought to him.
And he rode a bear all the way home.
Of course, that's the main mode of transport. And describing it, he said... Or rather, describing how he felt upon landing, he said, "Good, despite the gravity. I have satisfaction in completing my mission. The best bit is the relief of not having the responsibility of Mir again." So, you know, he was like, he was responsible for keeping the space station working. He was just up there doing that. Whilst on the ground, he had no idea what was going on, talking to some random person in Australia because his wife wouldn't tell him because she didn't want to stress him out. And he's just like, oh, my country's gone. Like, yeah. Or the Soviet Union is collapsed. Everything is different now. The place that I launched from is no longer a part of the country that it was part of when I launched.
Out of interest, why did Germany do that? Was it just they were just being nice?
Oh, they were sending someone up to space.
But why were they doing it?
Because they want a German engineer.
Oh, they okay, right.
Yeah, so like this, I mean, we actually are not terrible at collaborating when it comes to space stuff. I mean, you know, people have been in space. I mean, this is actually quite an interesting one that I hadn't really thought about. We've had people in space for about 20 years. There's for the past sort of 20-ish years, there's not been a time when someone hasn't been in space, which is really mad. It's really like you don't think about that there's constantly an astronaut or a cosmonaut up in space.
Yeah.
For the entirety, well, not for the entirety of our lives, for the entirety of our lives, but, you know, for at least most of them. And people listening, all of their lives.
It must have been such a sad thing for, like, when the stuff started happening in Russia recently, there's all these, like, collaborative organizations, like, working together on, like, the International Space Station that suddenly can't really work with each other properly. And you probably have friends across borders there, and you're all just striving for science. You're just like, and it doesn't really matter what country you're from. If you're a scientist, you're a scientist. And then you can't work with each other anymore. And all those like international collaborations break down.
Yeah. 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 It's rough. And they weren't being paid enough as well. The engineers on the ground and stuff. So they were kicking off about that. And it was a really rough time to be working in. Because what's going to happen? You know, like space... exploration and all of this sort of science stuff is ultimately not really fucking important at all in the grand scheme of things, right? It's one of the first things if you've got you know, a budget, you're like, oh, I'll cut that.
Yeah, that,
obviously.
That can go.
It can go, right? Like, I mean, we need to focus on Earth before we focus on what's going on in space. So he's landed back down now, right? This is March 1992, you know? So he's got back down and he's experiencing, you know, gravity, essentially, for the first time in ages. I know someone's going to be in the comments saying, oh, he was experiencing gravity. Yes, he was in orbit. He was essentially in free fall. So he was experiencing microgravity. He was basically in a zero-G environment. Yes, he was still within the gravitational pull of the Earth, but because he's in orbit, sort of free fall thing, he was experiencing, essentially, like zero-G, like microgravity.
Do you think someone would say that? Do you think you'd actually get a comment like that?
Yes.
If that was you, stop it. Go outside.
And like, you know what? I guess, yeah, no, absolutely. But like,
I appreciate the science, but
But this is the point, right? This is what I want to get across. There is a whole thing about sort of sharing knowledge, and it's really cool to be like, oh, do you know, like, the really interesting thing is actually he wasn't in zero-G.
Yeah, great.
Great. What I cannot stand is the people that are like, actually, look, you know, if you know something, share it. That's fine. They'd be like, oh, here's a really cool thing. Be excited to share knowledge with someone else. Don't make it about saying you're wrong. Make it about being an experience of like, oh, look at this cool new thing that I heard.
Yeah, but also the thing you said is like, the thing you said that someone might say is like, was his body experiencing a net downward force?
Yeah.
No, it was not. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's what we know. That's we're all talking about. Yeah. So shush it. Shush now. Go touch some grass.
Yeah, being technically correct is, you know, very fun. It's awesome. But also, we need to be able to just sort of use shorthand for things sometimes, as long as we all understand what we're talking about. And making fun of actually people is the easiest way for me to explain to our listeners.
We can all bond over that.
But listen, the really useful thing is I can make fun of these people that are like kind of, you know, make knowledge a competition whilst also explaining that knowledge to other people. It's a win-win. I get to let out my actually sort of like, you know, my feelings for like needing to do that. If I don't correct people nearly as much as I would have done before I started making fun of these people, because I get it's an outlet, you know, I get the feeling of correcting someone, but someone is myself. So it's fine. Anyway, moving on. as I said, he'd landed and all of that sort of stuff. But the world was not the same as it was when he'd gone up. the city that he had landed in, it was Soviet, and now it's Kazakhstan.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. The place that he lived, as I said, it was Leningrad. It was St. Petersburg now. Do you know what I mean? Like, wow. These things all sort of changed. He went around the earth 5,000 times, and the country's territory was now 5 million square kilometers smaller.
I don't think my brain can cope with this. I think if that happened to me, I would feel like I'd like accidentally gone through a wormhole into a parallel universe.
Right? Yeah.
I'm like, how do I get back to where there's a Soviet Union? Oh, no.
It's like, I mean, it's so much more than just, I mean, the closest thing I can sort of say is, well, what if the UK dissolved? But like that, all of the sort of states of the UK like kind of feel like independent countries, yeah. in a way. They're culturally quite different, and you know, like we maintain quite a separation, right? It's not like it's sort of, it doesn't feel, well, I mean, it very much is kind of one kind of ruling over the others, you know, essentially.
Sure.
But it's made to not feel that way, you know. So it wouldn't, it's not even necessarily comparable to the Soviet Union collapsing, and especially because the UK is tiny, so tiny, and you know, all these different cultures, whilst we are kind of like sort of distinct culturally, they're not that different, right? I mean, bear in mind, there were, I think, 100 different nationalities, sort of, or 100 different sort of like, you know, living in the Soviet Union. So it's, I mean, it spreads from like sort of Eastern Europe into sort of Asia. It's massive. So many different groups of people, so much. And the UK is so much less than that. But that's the closest thing that I can think of off the top. Or I guess going up, it's like going up to space and coming back down. Oh, California's seceded from the US.
The closest thing I think we have is like the United States collapsing. Or if, for example, as the conspiracy theorists on the right love to think, that the European Union wants to just become one big homogenous country. Imagine that happened and then the European Union collapsed and we all go back to being England, Scotland, but we don't have any of the institutions left that actually like upended that, because all our institutions are now one big homogenous institution for the European Union. That kind of thing. It's like that level of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not even, you know, even the United States do have their own sort of very robust systems to a certain extent, right? They do have, like, there's a lot of devolution of power in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, I don't think we can even that's not a perfect analogy.
Yeah,
it's really difficult. Really mad what happened.
And just to put this into perspective for people, 1922 was when the Soviet Union formed. So it was before he was even born. It was in the entirety of his life, you know, that this had existed. And then, boop, just gone when he lands.
Yeah.
So, you know, things had all changed name. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union, which had been in power since the 20s, I think from basically the very beginning, right?
Wow.
You know, that was no longer, it was no longer the basically only party. It was just one of lots of them. That's mad. That's mm-hmm. this thing that's run the country for my entire life and quite some time before that. It's now just one of many parties. Insane. And as I said, he had 600 rubles per month was his salary, and that was now less than what a bus driver. And I said less than a bus driver. Bus drivers earned twice as much. He was on as a cosmonaut 600 rubles a month. By the time he lands and the Soviet Union has dissolved, he is earning half as much as a bus driver.
Mm.
For being, and let me be very, very clear here. He was single-handedly, essentially, keeping a space station operating for 10 months. He wasn't alone for the full 10 months, but he was up there for basically the sole purpose of making sure that the space station stayed operating.
Literally holding the fort.
Yeah, and he's paid less, and everyone should be paid whatever wage, right? But like, I feel like a bus driver who gets to go home at the end of the day maybe should be paid a little less than a guy who was keeping a space station
smelly
going.
Tube.
Yeah, exactly,
he
right?
He lives in a smelly tube.
The bus is probably bigger than the space station, right? I actually don't know. Do we have we have double-decker buses that are bigger than, that are wider, at least, than the space station. That's mad. That's insane. Anyway, pay people fair wages. So... there's another quote from him. The change is not that radical. I lived on a territory of Russia while the republics were united into the Soviet Union. Now I've returned to Russia, which is part of the Commonwealth of Independent States. So it's not a huge change for him necessarily, but it still is a big change. He dealt with it pretty well, which is good. I mean, they choose the right people to be a cosmonauts, evidently.
Yeah, this guy sounds like a legend. I really like him.
He's really cool. I've watched a few of his interviews and stuff. You should definitely check him out. Linked below. He seems like an interesting guy. But yeah, he is the third longest sort of number of days in space. Second is Yuri Malenchenko, and first is Gennady Padalka. So third longest. He held the world record for the longest total time spent in space for 10 years, 803 days, 9 hours, and 42 minutes. And I said that he was a time traveler. That is true. Because of time dilation, he is 0.02 seconds younger than the people born at the exact same time as him.
Wow.
Right?
What a legend.
0.02 seconds. That's like not nothing.
It's a rounding error, though.
Yeah, but it's...
So it's nothing.
No, but it,
it's nothing.
Okay, right. But what I mean is that, like, you know, how do I put it? It is an understandable length of time.
0.02 seconds, an understandable length of time.
Yeah, not one that we can measure ourselves, but one that we can understand conceptually.
I don't think I can.
You can't understand a second. Yeah. Right. Now imagine that.
Yeah. Go on.
Divided by
500,
and then divided by 10 again.
Yeah.
And then twice that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Understand, you're so, right?
You know what? You convinced me.
But still, you know, you spend 800 days in space and you get 0.02 seconds younger. That's not bad.
Well, yeah, swings and roundabouts, isn't it? No, you're right. I mean, I can comprehend a 50th of a second more than I can comprehend 500th of a second. So I take it all back, Corey.
Should we talk about the dangers of being in space?
Yes.
So one of the first ones, radiation. Now, you understand that, there's a radiation. It's not good for you. Our planet kind of protects us in the sense that we've got a magnetic field and the atmosphere, and that deflects a lot of the radiation. I mean, you know, you get sunburn, that's radiation damage, you know, it's UV radiation messing up your skin. But, being in space, it's quite a bit worse. So we get exposed to low levels of radiation all the time. You know, there's a little bit of radiation in bananas, there's a little bit of radiation, you know, I mean, I guess radiation is it's a very broad word, right? But yeah, I mean, we get exposed to radiation pretty much all the time. Even without taking into account, you know, sort of x-rays and medical stuff, you know, there's granite as well, right? Is that not like,
yeah,
kind of, yeah, there you go. So we get exposed to radiation. We're able to deal with it a little bit, right? Now, in space, there is less atmosphere. Some would argue none.
But more tube, to be fair.
There, depends. I have plenty of tube of beans downstairs. So
you can hide inside of them.
Maybe, depending on how many you have. Now, you get exposed to more radiation in space. There are cosmic rays radiation from the sun, so solar energetic particles, and then also stuff from particles trapped in Earth's magnetic field. And the issue is that being in space, you don't have much protection for that. So space stations and spacecrafts need to have like a lot of radiation protection. But on top of that, we've also found that apparently being in space, or rather the type of radiation that's in space, is more damaging than the type of radiation that you get on Earth. So it has a bigger impact on your health. And those impacts could be cancer, degenerative diseases, cataracts, radiation damage to your body. That's just one thing. There's also gravity. So because you're, not experiencing gravity. Gravity, essentially, you're constantly having to hold, like right now we're sitting up, right? We're sat on something, but we're sitting up. I am having to expend energy to keep my body up, right? I'm using my muscles and my bones to hold all of this upright. And that's going against gravity, right? I am essentially providing a force to stop myself from coming down, kind of all the time, essentially, right? If you want to think about it that way. Now, that's a kind of constant exertion that you obviously don't really think about, right? Generally, most people wouldn't. But when you're in space and you don't have that, you're working less, essentially. Your muscles don't need to do as much work because you can just float around, moving in a sort of gravity environment like the Earth, right? If you're walking, you've got to walk and constantly keep yourself up and push against, the ground to propel yourselves forward. And you can't just push once and continue going because there's friction, you've got to continue to use that force to move yourself forwards. If you are in like a basically zero G environment, push something and you're going to keep on just kind of flowing, right? You don't need to expend nearly as much energy consciously or, just sort of like unconsciously just from sitting up. So what that ends up doing, it means that your bones start to lose density. And there are other reasons that sort of all these things happen as well, not just the sort of lack of strength, but your muscles will sort of start to, lose muscle mass. Your bones lose about 1% to 1.5% of mineral density per month. During space flight, apparently, while you can't necessarily get back all of that sort of density, it doesn't increase your risk for fracture. Having that lower density,
interesting.
Also, as in after rehabilitation,
yeah.
Even though you haven't regained the density, like when you might not, that doesn't at that point your risk of fracture isn't necessarily higher. I don't know why. That's just what NASA said.
That sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but yeah. I trust NASA.
Exactly. You've got to do an exercise routine, have a proper diet, otherwise you'll lose muscle mass. Gravity, if you think about it, is down pretty much all the time, right? Mm. And that means that your body has to do work to keep stuff up. So the fluids that are in your body start to migrate up towards the top of your body. That can cause issues with your vision. If you don't do stuff against it, you could get kidney stones because of dehydration because the fluids are moving up, and more calcium, being excreted from your bones. Dude, it is like actually mad. It's one of these things you don't think about that your body's constantly having to, keep fluids coming up.
I don't understand why we haven't made those spinning space stations yet. They're in all the movies and they do work. It's not fake science.
Yeah, it's one of those forces that doesn't technically exist. So is it centrifugal force?
Yeah.
God, I really hate having to describe this.
So basically, imagine you're spinning a ball on a string and you're just spinning it out and there's the string, you're spinning it around your head and the string stays taut, right? It doesn't fall back in towards you as long as you keep spinning it. And that's because there's an outward force or effectively an outward force pushing the weight or the tennis ball or whatever you've got at the end of the string outwards. And if you are inside of a thing that's doing that, you're pushed outwards and the floor is the outside whilst you're spinning. So you get like a fake gravity.
Yeah. It's like when you got a bucket of water and you just swing that around and the water doesn't spill out. Because the water is essentially being pushed to the bottom of the bucket. It's the same thing.
And great thing about space is that once you've sped up to that speed, you don't have to keep expending fuel to stay at that speed because there's nothing to slow you down.
I mean, I don't know why we don't have that. I think the reason for it would be, one, just more wear and tear, isn't it? Something constantly spinning, right? That's
risk of, especially with all the space junk.
Yeah. And, you don't necessarily want to have, it might be preferable to have a microgravity environment, especially for a lot of the tests you're going to be doing.
Yeah, you're doing microgravity tests, I suppose, aren't you?
Yeah, and of course you can probably then create something where you can go from the area to the... But I just think...
You could do them in the middle.
Have a little
testing area in the middle, sleeping area in the outside.
I think the issue is that it is possible, but it's just not necessarily the most prudent thing to be doing. You know what I mean? We can get around all of these problems fairly easily with other measures without having to like engineer a spinning space station sort of thing.
It
does look really cool. It does look really cool. But that is more or less it for him. You know, so that's the sort of the other danger of being in space as well. There's many, but being in a closed environment, microbes can, as I said, can adapt to space and be sort of changed differently. So they can also transfer from person to person more easily. And if you're stressed, your immune system is kind of chained, and you are under constant stress in space, obviously. So it literally could make you more allergic to things or more susceptible to different illnesses. And that's kind of the dangers of it. But quickly, just to get back to Krika, I'm really struggling with his name and I don't know why. Krikalev. There's so many different ways of writing it because it's being written, it's a Russian name, so it's being like sort of transliterated into English. But anyway, you might think that was him done in space.
Oh no, did he go back?
He went right back into training.
What a legend.
And he was the first Russian cosmonaut to be on an American spacecraft. He flew a mission in 1994, which is only 2 years after he came back down. He went to space for the fourth time in 98, and he went for a fifth time. He went to space quite a few more times. Then he became the head of a sort of training thing for cosmonauts. And I think he was in 2007. He was the vice president of manned flights at Energia. And gosh, he did a lot of stuff, right? And I think he might still be working. Well, he's 65 now, so he may have retired. It's hard to find sort of like current information on him. He did a few interviews with him a few years ago because if you might recall, there were some people on the ISS who were kind of stranded in space for a while because there was a fluid leak. There was an issue, and he was part of the team that coordinated bringing them down. So Russia basically sent up. A craft to bring these people down. And he was part of that, sort of saving the ISS. And just a fun fact, I kind of mentioned this earlier. Russia, the US, Canada, Japan, and everyone that's part of the European Space Agency have basically all together have had at least one person in space consistently since the 31st of October 2000. That means that from the 31st of October 2000, there's been someone in space, you know, for that entire time. So, you know, by the end of October, you know, I think the month this comes out, it'll be about 23 years, I think, that we've had someone consistently. Like, we've had someone, at least one person in space.
That's quite a streak.
Yeah, it's mad. It's really cool. And I just want to end it with a quote from our lost astronaut, or forgotten astronaut, shall we say, or forgotten cosmonaut, more correctly. I remember from my first flight, when you look down, it is a little more difficult to find things on the surface. I practiced this. It was so good earlier. When you do it on the map, you have borders, and they start to use borders as a landmark. But in space, you have no borders. You have only natural rivers, mountains, beaches, forests.
Beaches!
or something like that. You start to understand that in many cases, our separation on Earth is more artificial. We are living on the same surface. When you see a forest fire, You see that smoke is going sometimes for hundreds of kilometers. They all cross borders. There is no wall on this border. If you have disaster on one side, it can easily spread on another side. If you have flooding, it floods an area not looking at the border between different regions or different countries. You start to see that we are more united. And you can hear him say that himself, linked below in an interview. I didn't want to put it in here because of rights or whatnot. But essentially, I love this quote. It's what you were saying up at the start that, you know, countries don't exist. And he says basically that, you know, countries don't exist. I was up there and I struggled to understand what I was seeing because we're so used to seeing things with borders and using borders as a way of understanding the world. But if you're in space, you're looking at the actual planet. There are no borders. You know, the divisions of countries mean nothing. A forest fire doesn't care. You know, this is Canada now. No, doesn't matter. And I think
we need to send fire to jail. needs to start respecting borders.
I was going to say we need to send world leaders to space.
Both. But do yeah, both.
But no, like seriously, I love this quote, and I love that sort of thing you get from astronauts where they go up to space and they have perspective. You know, we're all one people, and we shouldn't, you know, have the division of countries sort of limiting us. But that is it. It's now time for the quickfire quiz.
Dun 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 dun. I'm stuck in space. Bring me back. Edition.
Luke in space. And the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience. The first person to answer the question after finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
They win a little trip to space for an indeterminate amount of time.
Luke, we really don't have the money for that. We don't have 27 mil lying around. And that's in 1990s money.
Do a GoFundMe.
Well, do a GoFundMe to send someone to space. Okay. And my question, for you is... when did the Soviet Union dissolve?
1991.
But more specifically.
October.
Wrong.
November.
No.
Diciembre.
No. Yes. Yeah. That is correct. Well done. Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact us at SciSpot on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCodforth everywhere.
Bye.
Ciao.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.